Good afternoon. Thanks for coming. My name is Charmaine Lin. I'm the director of the Office of Admissions for the Faculty of Medicine, and I'm very pleased to see you here today. And thank you for taking the time, both for volunteering for the purposes of our selection processes for the Faculty of Medicine and Dentistry, and for taking the time to come today to learn about the process and learn about your role as an assessor, or sorry, a rater for the MMIs. I'm going to start with some disclosures. The presenters today we have no commercial interests, and we have no conflicts of interest with any of the candidates who are coming through the process this year. I'm going to introduce the members of the Subcommittee on Multiple Mini Interviews, which is the committee whose mandate it is to oversee the blueprinting of our MMI stations, the development of stations, the translation of stations, the standardization of evaluation criteria. It's a lot of work. It's a very hardworking committee. So I'm going to ask them each to stand up and introduce themselves. I'll start with Dr. Bank. Introduce yourself.
I'm Alana Bank. I'm one of the pediatric emergency physicians of the children's. I've been involved with the MMI for several years now. This is the first year I'm chairing the committee, and it's been a great experience.
Thanks. Dr. Danoff.
I'm Deborah Danoff, and I'm an internist clinical immunologist by training, but I haven't been involved with clinical medicine for some time. I've used up my time in medical education and administration, and I'm delighted to be with you today.
Dr. Noel.
Hi, I'm Jeffrey Noel. I'm an anatomist by training, and I'm involved with medical education since a couple of years, and I've been designing station and involved with the MMI for many years as well.
Dr. Eskenazi, there you are.
Sandra Eskenazi, I'm affiliated with the Faculty of Dentistry at McGill and with the Jewish General, and I have been involved with the MMIs for several years now.
Thank you. I'm Charmaine. Another member of our committee, Dr. Salim Razak, who you will know as the former Assistant Dean of Admissions, is also on the committee. He's not here today. And we're also happy to have Dr. Primavesi, who is the new Assistant Dean of Admissions, here with us to answer any admissions-related questions that you may also have that the committee or myself can't answer. So we're going to move on. Oh, the agenda is actually not correct in terms of the time. But basically what we're going to do today is we're going to give you an overview of the selection process. We wanted to give you an idea of how applicants actually get to the interview process, what happens to them before they come to interviews. It's a very brief overview. Some nuts and bolts of things that you need to know about the process and your role. And then we're going to move into some practical exercises assessing where you're going to try and assess two actor-based stations, and then we'll explain some of the other kinds of stations that you'll see on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week. And then we'll answer your questions if you have them as we go along. Please feel free to ask any questions at any time. We'll do our best to answer them. We did this already. Okay. This is... just very briefly, I wanted to share with you the guiding principles of the admissions office. These are on our website. They're more fully explained than just these words, but these are the key concepts for how we operate in the selection process for admission to the medical programs. We are seeking excellence. We understand excellence to be a plural concept. It involves many things. We seek to be inclusive in our processes. That means that we hope to have tools that are accessible. We have information that is readily accessible to all applicants. If any of you have ventured onto our website, you will see there's a voluminous amount of information to give applicants an idea of what happens to their transcripts, their CVs, when they come to us. We seek to be aligned with the curriculum and the curricular objectives for our learners. Fairness and transparency, they go hand in hand. We have processes, we have policies that are published and known to our applicants. We execute those policies, and we are as transparent as we can possibly be for a selection process, that we also kind of have to strike a balance with confidentiality. And we're going to talk a lot about confidentiality today. So these are our guiding principles. These are your guiding principles as raters in our selection processes. I'm just going to maybe ask for the door to be closed, actually. That would be great. So there are some handouts that have been circulated. There's a conflict of interest policy that is available to you. You will have probably seen it already when you were asked to give us your availabilities. You're going to see it over and over again throughout this process. If there is a conflict of interest, we ought to have been alerted about it before you came into this room today, but if there is by any chance a conflict of interest that has arisen since the last time we have corresponded, which is possible, it happens at every stage of our process, things happen that you're not aware of, or you would not have been aware of 2 weeks before, please let us know urgently. You should actually let us know right now before we go forward, and the appropriate thing to do would be to talk to Dr. Primavesi about it. Does anybody need to assuage any concerns about possible conflicts of interest? Is there anything more that you would like me to say about this at this moment?
No, just that you know, the question ends up being, because our process is very, it's really quite objective, and it involves multiple players, and there's not one person that actually has any decision on the admission of any particular candidate. The question is, you know, what's a real conflict of interest, and what's a perceived conflict of interest? I had a meeting with Dean Eidelman on Monday to discuss various things about admissions, and he was very clear in that a perceived conflict of interest is a conflict of interest. Even though there's no direct relationship to the selection of the candidates, and for us to look clean and meet the public's expectations, we have to make sure that we manage a conflict of interest policy as it is written.
Thanks. Any questions about that? Great. We like to err on the side of paranoia, so. We'll just be paranoid about it. Confidentiality goes hand in hand with this as well. You are members of this community. You interact with people who are interested in knowing how we select learners, about what goes on in the curriculum. You have insight into that you are always going to be called upon to share with people in different circumstances. With respect to your role in this process, the selection methods, the conversations that we have, the identity of people who were involved with the process, particularly applicants, and especially the applicants, is off limits for public conversation. You may find yourself in elevators. You may find yourself being asked by people who are close to you to review documents. You may have done so in the past. If that ever happened in the past, it's the kind of thing that should be absolutely stopped. Because of the nature and the importance of the integrity of our process. It's a question of fairness for all applicants. Not all applicants will have the ability to ask somebody something about med school or applying to med school or dentistry. So we want to make sure that in terms of equity and fairness to all applicants, that the playing field is as even as possible. The content of the scenarios, evaluation methods and criteria, the grids, identity of applicants, the being on site in the simulation center is a place where you're not to be using any kind of devices to record anything, to capture images of anything. That's off limits. It's a big problem for us, and we want you to respect that totally. How long does your obligation last? I'm paranoid, so I would say forever. You're going to learn things this year that will be important next year, that would have been important last year. The term of your obligation is in perpetuity. What does this mean? What does it matter? I don't know if this is a conversation that you wish to have more fully, or if this is everybody's on the same page about this. If that's the case, we're good to go. Are we all on the same page about confidentiality? Great. Okay, some nuts and bolts now for you as raters. Please come. You have been scheduled. The scheduling of evaluators, so I'm going to drift into saying evaluators as I'm learning the new language. We really need you to show up. We really need you to show up when you've been asked to arrive. There are lots of moving parts to a process like this, and it's crucial that we're able to rely on you. If for whatever reason you are not able to come, you need to let us know in a timely manner. You know, we want you to behave as the professionals that you are, so that's the expectation. Thank you. You may be assigned as a backup rater. So people who are usually new to the process as new raters, often learners, will be scheduled as backups. It is a crucial role. It may seem like it's boring. It is not boring. You get a chance to look around at the stations. You get a chance to meet the other raters and kind of have a perspective that you may not have if you're assigned to a station and you're parked there for 4 hours, which is very exciting too, don't worry. But it is crucial to us to be able to manage all of the moving parts. So it's an important role, and we thank you for agreeing to do that. You may be asked to familiarize yourself with up to 3 or 4 stations as a backup. We have had days when we have been left with one backup at the end because of scheduling changes that happened at the last minute. So you could go from kind of sitting, doing nothing for a while to really hitting the ground running very quickly on a moment's notice. Good things to know. We need you. You'll be reminded of a lot of these things on the day of as well during your morning briefing, but I think it's good for you to have it in your minds already. We need you to verify that the identity of every candidate who's going to come in front of you every single time. You will receive a package of evaluation materials that include the instructions for each station and the score sheets for every single candidate who you're scheduled to see on a given circuit. The score sheets are in your envelope in exactly the order in which the people are supposed to be coming to you. So it should be a very straightforward exercise. There should be, we encourage you not to shuffle any papers around, particularly the score sheets. Keep them in the order that they're in. But we want you to look. Sometimes people have long hair or the name tags turn around. We ask the simulation center staff to be vigilant about before they place people at their doors to make sure their name tags are visible to you. It could happen that you may not be able to see it. We can work it out with you. I'll be walking around the hallways. We can always look at the person at the next station and ensure that it's the right person. But it's a crucial part of the process. Again, we're not capturing images. We're not using our phones to do anything. We've had people take images. We've had situations where somebody tried to translate text. And if you're on a station on a French day, we always have English copies of the stations in the big meeting room where evaluators are gathered at the beginning and the end of each session. So there are always translated copies in either language on the bilingual days. So if you need a translation, ask us and we will give it to you. There's no need for you to seek any outside source of translation. If you are on an actor-based station, know that there are two circuits that are going at the same time. So you'll be on station one, and there's another station one happening with a different set of actors on the other side. So if there's some kind of feedback that you have about an actor's performance or tone or energy level or something, we ask you not to interact directly with the actor and give them that feedback. It's important that we bring that feedback to myself, Dr. Bank, Dr. Primavesi, any of the members of the MMI committee who are there, or the simulation center staff. They will then be able to ensure, they will look at both sides, because we need to make sure that any adjustments, and we try not to make adjustments at all on the day of, but if it's necessary, it would need to be calibrated on both sides. So that's the reason behind that request. Some special notes. The Faculty of Medicine, and this kind of comes back to one of our guiding principles about inclusivity, we have policies that seek to level the playing field for all applicants. So for example, when applicants are invited to interviews, there's a paragraph in their invitation letter that asks them if they have financial need. If a person is invited and they are not able to pay for the travel costs to come to our mandatory on-site interviews, and they qualify for financial aid through the student aid office, we give them a stipend to come to the interviews. It should not be a barrier to their access to the program. Similarly, we have a policy for accommodation for any kind of disability through the, it's on our website to all applicants, and it's also another paragraph in the letter of invitation. So any applicant who comes to the interview will know at the moment that they're invited that this is available to them, and there's a process. We work with the Office of Students with Disabilities here at McGill. We will alert you on the day of if there are any candidates who are going to be coming through who may need accommodation of any kind, and we will guide you as raters through that day about what to look for, what not to do. One of the things that we can tell you right now is that if candidates are permitted to have notes with them, you're not to ask them anything about those notes. There's no line of questioning about their notes. If you have any concerns that somebody should or shouldn't have notes with them, don't question the candidate. Score them according to the grid and make a note on the back of your score sheet that says this candidate had notes. Then bring it to our attention at the end of the circuit and we will verify that that person was indeed the person who was authorized to have the notes. And if there's any flag whatsoever, we'll deal with it through the professionalism committee. Any questions at this point? Good, okay. Another special note, on February 18th, we will be doing interviews for dentistry applicants. It's largely dentistry applicants with some students, or applicants rather, who are applying to both medicine and dentistry. We started this last year, and we're continuing again this year. It was such a success last year. That's happening on the 18th. It's a bilingual day. Very important note, if you are assigned the CV station, you are not to ask the candidate to indicate a preference for a program. We're not asking them to rank programs. We don't care in the interview process. What we care about are the questions that are standardized in your evaluator package. Clear enough? Great. How do applicants get to the interview? The big picture, in a given year, we have about 2,800 applicants to medicine. Here, I'm just going to talk about medicine. 2,800 people applying in a given year, about 550 to 600 interview places, 184 places in the class. For the purposes of the February interviews that we're doing next week, you're going to be seeing applicants to the MD program. So these are university degree-holding students. If you're coming back in May, you'll be seeing the applicants to the preparatory programs. So these are students who will be coming out of CJEP. So this is with respect to the students who you're seeing next week. In order for us to determine which of the 2,800 people are going to be funneled into the interview process, we look at academic and non-academic criteria. The academic dossier is weighted at 70%. This is all on our website, and applicants are very well aware of this. Inside that 70%, there's a 10% of bonus points, I guess you could call it, that are given to applicants who demonstrate certain countable, measurable things that we can find in the self-reported grades tool that the students submit to us. Progression of difficulty of courses. So if two people have a 3.9 GPA and one person has taken proportionally more 400 and 500 level courses than the other person, their file would be looked at more favorably. Similarly, if a person is in a professional program, so a program that leads to a professional order, such as architecture, law, engineering, for example, they will be given, again, a more favorable weighting. and post-baccalaureate programs. So if people have undertaken master's or doctoral work, that's also taken into account for that extra 10% inside the 70%. The non-academic dossier is the CV and personal narrative. Has anybody here read the CVPNs this year? Was it a rater one? Okay, so a few people, okay. Applicants are asked to submit a CV and a personal narrative. It's a two-page CV and a one-page personal narrative with structured questions with an evaluation grid on those questions. Each CVPN is read by two independent readers. Each reader gets a batch of about 70 files in the same pool. So if you're reading Quebec residents, you're comparing apples and apples. If you're reading Canadians from outside of Quebec, you're reading the oranges. It's that kind of thing. We bring the scores back. We Z-score each reader so that you behave as your own normal. And then we aggregate that score and add it. We put it on a denominator of 30. We take your academic dossier, which we've also put on a denominator of 70, and we do some math. We add it up, put it on a denominator of 100, look at how many places we have to offer in the interview list, and go down the list in the rank order and offer interview seats according to those criteria that are set out there. After the interviews, for the people who you're seeing next week, their assessment on, in terms of who will get a final offer for admission is based on 80% weight for the MMI, total MMI score, so there's overall score on all 10 stations, and 20% is based on their basic science performance, which is their GPA on the required prerequisite courses that we have for the medicine program. When you see MedP students, the CEGEP students, international medical graduates who will be interviewed next week as well, and non-traditional pathway applicants who will be interviewed in May, their files will be viewed on 100% MMI because of different things having to do with their basic science prep. Any questions about this process?
Maybe I can just, I'll just comment on why that is that way. So the MedP pool is very, very homogenous. They all are Quebec grads from CEGEP. They have very similar backgrounds. So once the academic assessment has been done, really the MMI is what counts towards admission. The university applicants are very diverse. Although most are Quebec residents, you can qualify for Quebec residency status through 17 different ways, including being born in Quebec but being grown
everywhere
elsewhere. So they come with very different experiences. And to align the admissions process with the new curriculum, which in the first 18 months is quite basic science oriented, and so that we select candidates who have diverse experience, do well on the MMIs, have lots of meds competencies, but to make sure that they can succeed academically in the program, we include 20% on basic science prerequisites. So that explains that.
Okay, we're going to keep going on. The blueprint. So this is the big picture of what happens on the MMI days. Each candidate, so on one day next week, we'll see 108 people. 108 people will go through 10 different stations, so we'll have 1,080 interactions that will be evaluated next Monday, and that will be the same case every day next week. The 10 stations are mapped to competencies that are aligned with our curriculum. I'm going to give you just a snapshot of what the breakdown of those 10 stations is. You will have one station that is the CV station, which feels like most like a traditional interview where a candidate walks in with their CV and personal narrative. They've already been read by you as the MMI raters on that station, and you will have standardized questions to go through with them. I'm going to take one step back. Candidates have 2 minutes to read at the door. It's all very tightly timed circuits. They have 2 minutes to read at the door, and then they will have 7 minutes to perform whatever it is that we were asking them to do. So you will have 2 minutes to read their, to score them, and 7 minutes to interview them. That's just for the CV station, and I'll go into more detail about the CV station afterwards. There is one reflection station where students are asked to read a passage, and then they have 7 minutes to write a response, and they're asked specific questions that they're asked to respond to in respect of that passage. There are two quantitative problem-solving questions where you, as a rater, if you're assigned to one of these stations, you're interacting with the applicant. Usually they will have 2 minutes of reading time. They will have about 3 or 4 minutes to do some work on the problem, and then the balance of time will be you stepping in with them and then asking them to walk you through their reasoning, how they came to a solution, if they came to a solution, where they ran into barriers, that kind of thing. One of these stations is kind of estimation orders of magnitude type of question, and the other is probabilities. There is another station that is similar in format with 2 minutes of reading time, 3 minutes of problem solving, and 4 minutes of talking. It's graphic interpretation, where the student is presented with an infographic that shows some kind of relationship between concepts or phenomena that is stripped of any kind of legend. It doesn't ground them. They don't know what it's about. It's just data presented graphically, and they have to try to understand what is being presented to them. Then they hazard a guess at that. Then you go in, you talk to them about what they think might be going on, and then you show them the complete image with the legend and explain to them the context of what was presented to them in the infographic. And then you have a conversation about it, and you're guided in that conversation. And then there are 5 stations with standardized actors. These are the same actors who work within our medical curriculum with all of our learners. There are 5 stations that kind of cover the gamut of the non-academic competencies that we're looking for in terms of communication, conflict management, teamwork, leadership, integrity, honesty, professionalism. Those are the kinds of things that we're going to try and get at by putting applicants in real-life situations that are non-medical, that do not require any specific information or knowledge other than what is expected of people who have the basic science prerequisites and who have a degree, basically. Those are the kinds of basic things that we're doing, and we don't put them in medical situations. I'm just going to turn to my chair, and because we thought we were going to be able to do the exercise with the actor stations with clickers, but we're having some technical problems actually being able to use the clickers. So maybe I'll just ask you or ask the room: should we do the actor ones first, or do them last? It doesn't matter to me.
If you guys are okay, I think we'll just continue. We do the actor stations; they're fun to do, and then we can come back to
the other ones. Okay. So this is basically what I said 2 seconds ago. 5 of 10 stations are actor-based, broadly testing these competencies that are behind me. And for this week of stations, you will not be interacting with the student at all. So there's no going in the room for these stations. Sometimes we've written stations where there's a bit of that happening, but it's not going to be happening next week. So you're behind a glass. They cannot see you. And you're evaluating them with your score sheet. So we have some videos to show you. This is the candidate instruction that the candidate will see on the door and that will be part of your evaluator package. So this is the station. I'll let you read this. All right, I'm going to hope that this, here. And then this is what you're going to be asked to evaluate. And then I'll show you the video. Okay.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, how are you? Sorry.
I'm okay.
How do I make it go in the middle? Oh, weird. Okay.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Beth, I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I had a bit of a rough morning. I rushed to class and then.
Can you hear?
Can you put it a little up?
Yeah. The volume on the actual video, which you have to move over.
Okay, we're gonna try. Let's start over.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Beth, I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I had a bit of a rough morning.
Can you hear it?
You must be wondering why I asked you that. So we have that sociology class that we'll be together.
Okay. Do you have some idea?
Is there like a general control thing where you could?
Yeah, but we're not on this computer. Oh, yeah. That's the problem. Yeah. Oh, yeah? Okay.
No, it's not coming from here because it's plugged in. Now try.
Okay.
Let's play.
Oh. Is that better?
And there was just one issue that I thought would be important to discuss since we've become really good friends over the year. And it's just there's no easy way of saying it, and this might be a little awkward, but...
Okay. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. Should I start from the beginning again? You're okay? Okay. So we're going to go. Ready? Here we go.
I just wanted to tell you that I noticed that sometimes when we're talking and we're a little close that you have a little bit of issue with your breath. Yeah. I know. It's gonna be a little awkward.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you why I thought it would be good to talk about it.
Oh, my God, that's so embarrassing.
Yeah. I know.
I'm so sorry.
No, you don't need to apologize. It's fine. Absolutely don't need to apologize.
I'm stay here.
But
I'm
wanted to
is
tell
it
you
okay,
because,
so
like, we're in sociology, and we are going to be applying for internships to work in labs and stuff, and we're going to be applying for jobs. And this is something that might affect the outcome. And we become really good friends, and I would want someone to tell me if my breath smells.
Yeah, and, of course, but...
And this is something that... Like, you think it's bad now, but this is something that will be fixed, and no one, it won't matter anymore, right?
Okay, but I mean, you mentioned the group. Do you mean that everyone's been talking about this?
So,
like,
yeah,
does everyone think I have bad breath in the group?
Well, we talked about it, yeah.
Oh my God.
But it's
oh
because,
God,
but like, we become good
so
friends,
bad.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I know it sounds like it's bad, but we decided
that... I feel
that,
bad now. Yeah, I don't want to feel...
You absolutely don't need to feel bad about this. We got together and we discussed that we figured it would be way less awkward if one person spoke to you about it. And the way you want to handle this is absolutely up to you.
Okay,
like, personally, I'm more of a, like, just beat the conversation until it doesn't matter anymore. So I'd go up to the group and be like,
I think it's
hey
okay.
Guys, my breath smells. Deal with it.
I might
and
need you
not
for
not
the next video. We'll go through the slide, but I don't know how
but
to make them
yeah.
organized.
You guys are like the only friends I've made
okay.
for so far.
We'll just get through the question.
Really
do you want to do that part?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You guys, and it's been a bit overwhelming for me, but
I'm going to sit down.
I mean,
is that okay?
I was trying to take care of myself, but I had trouble meeting people, and you guys were like the only group that I had, and now you all think I have...
Yeah, but I mean, that's not... Like, we decided that because we're friends, we're going to talk about it, and we're all first-year students. We've all had trouble making friends, and it's an adaptation process for all of us, and... Like, we all have our days of bad breath and not, but we figured maybe is there something you think that is causing this, or?
I
tried
to take care of myself, but it's been hard because, you know, when you rest,
yeah, absolutely.
It's like a bit overwhelming, and I don't have time for a lot of things.
Exactly.
I guess I haven't really touched them as much
okay.
as I should. Like, I wake up late and I rush out the door, and I drink a lot of coffee, so. And,
yeah,
you
well,
know, but,
you're a university student.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, since I'm new to the city, I haven't really have time to find a dentist.
Okay. Well,
but, I mean, I thought I was taking care of it. I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, it's not bad. It's just something we noticed, and we thought that it would be really ideal to talk to you about. I'm only doing this because we're friends, and I felt like I would want someone to tell me. And I know at the beginning it's awkward, but once it fixes itself, it won't matter anymore.
Yeah. But what do you think I should do? Because I thought it was okay,
yeah.
You know?
Well, you mentioned like that you don't brush your teeth regularly. Is there anything else that how habits that might affect your breath?
Well, do you think I smoke a bit when I'm stressed?
Okay.
Do you think that's
possible? We can talk about your smoking habit another day, though. But but maybe brushing your teeth. I know it sounds like a chore at the beginning, and like you know, they say you should brush your teeth for 2 minutes, and maybe trying it, like it might help. And then try it out. If that doesn't, I can refer you. I have a great dentist that I found.
Yeah.
His charm, like he has massage.
Okay,
I can give you his number, and you can make an appointment. And but like it's well, when was the last time you saw your dentist?
Like I think.
Yeah, so maybe it would be a good idea to have a meeting with one. But it's not the end of the world. You can start by brushing your teeth, and if that helps, then you can take your time. But I don't want you to feel bad. Don't put your hand in front of your mouth. It makes you feel terrible.
I mean, it's
but
embarrassing. I don't
yeah.
want you to have.
It's fine. I don't smell anything now. I don't smell anything now. But just I just want you to know that my intentions were good, and I don't want you to feel bad at all.
And it's very nice of you to tell me. I mean, you're being a really good friend.
Awesome.
I mean, it's embarrassing, but I would rather know now than 4 years later when I graduate.
And like with the group we discussed, and I know it sounds awful that we discussed it as a group, but if you don't want to deal with it again, like you don't have to talk about it. If you wanna just say, hey guys, I appreciate it. It's fine.
You think it's okay with everyone? Like they don't feel forced? They don't
no
feel
one
like
feels forced
to
do anything. This is entirely up to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really nice. Thank you for telling me.
All right. So we're going to go, back to the slideshow. If I can do that. All right. So we're going to go through each question that we read that you guys read before. We'll go through it one at a time, and unfortunately we don't have the clickers, but maybe I can have a raise of hands. So just the first question, ability to establish a friendly, non-judgmental relationship with the student receiving the news. So I'm going to say A, anyone thinks that this candidate failed? No. B, inadequate? Okay. C, good? All right. D, strong? 5, 6, okay. E, very strong. 21. So 21 for that. F, excellent. So it's 7. And G, outstanding. Okay. So just that we can come sort of to a little bit of a consensus, a little bit bring ourselves closer together. So it's good that no one thought this person failed or was inadequate. So we had from strong to outstanding. So maybe those of you who are strong, would somebody like to say why strong, why not, what do you think could have been better? Or those who are saying outstanding, why do you think that? So we can have that conversation.
I feel that the first reaction to the patient being kind of in shock was to laugh right away, which is not necessarily good to a situation where someone is receiving bad news. It's not necessarily to just laugh and, I don't know, it's just...
So it was a bit awkward at the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's good. Any other comments? Observations? No one else?
Recording.
Sorry. So I thought throughout the relationship she was still worried about the friends. I'm thinking addressed fully.
The concern with the other
friends, yeah.
With the other group.
She was going to have to go back to the group. Sort of left it up to her. Could have said we're still going to be friends or something like that.
So not addressing the group issue?
Yeah.
Okay. You wanted to say
somebody
something?
Somebody who thought he was outstanding, so I wanted to hear from the person who thought.
So I think that this is inherently an awkward situation. I don't think it's realistic to pinpoint specific examples of malaise and say that was an error. I think that overall, based on the gravity of the situation, the participant approached it in a very, tried to offer it in a very lighthearted way, which allowed the other person to accept it in a very lighthearted way. To me, that could have gone poorly, as we stated before, but that did seem to be an organic response that was reciprocated by the other participant. I think that this person covered all the other aspects of the problem in itself, where to get help, the viewpoints of the other students. And I think that, yeah, there were things that could have been improved, like perhaps like about special student app or something, or, you know, close the physical gap. But overall, looking at that, it's an awkward situation at the end. I think it was very, very well.
Okay, that's reasonable. Go ahead.
It's interesting that the comments have been about the entire interaction. My experience with this is really to concentrate on the question asked, not about the entire overall experience. This was about the ability to establish the friendly non-judgment. So to me, I was looking at just what happened at the beginning to establish it and rate that. Because otherwise, you end up giving the same mark pretty well all the way down, because you know you're looking at it globally rather than individual. That's always been my problem with this, is breaking down
right.
the five questions and making some differentiation sometimes rather than ending up, oh, that was good, so good.
All right. I think that's a very good point, and I think that's why we have the five questions. And so we're going to go through the other questions, but the key here is not everyone's going to be equal, and we're not all going to have equal marks for everything. Everybody's different, right? And so the idea is it was a very good it was a good station for this candidate. And then for this, in terms of looking at the actual questions, so ability to establish a friendly, non-judgmental relationship, I think he did quite well. So we have to look at, and I agree with you, Greg, I think you have to look at the specific question. So we'll move on to the second question. So ability to respond to the student's initial awkwardness and embarrassment upon hearing the news. And so I think that comes back to what you guys said initially, right? That there was that, like, I don't know how to deal with this. I've said something. Is it a bit awkward? So we'll just go quickly through these ones. So fail, any fails? No. Inadequate? Good? Strong? So about 13. Very strong? Also about 13 or 14. Excellent. And outstanding. Of course, so we really did fall into like a much closer aspect for this. And I think it's probably exactly because of what you said, Greg, that we should focus a little bit more on the actual question. So we'll go to the next one. Communication skills, listening, speaking clearly, use of appropriate language, use of nonverbal cues, questioning, and requests for clarification. So fail, anybody? Inadequate? Good? Strong? So about 5. Very strong? So I'd say about 15. Excellent? Okay, and outstanding. So again, I think we've all sort of collapsed into a more narrow range, so that's good. Mm-hmm. Ability to be helpful in resolving the current situation. So fail, inadequate, good, 2, strong, so about 10, very strong, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, so about 15, 20. We did excellent, outstanding. Okay, so again, I think everyone, the hard part with these questions is that it's a wider range for the good part, like the good to outstanding, and a very small range for the not so good. So, but it's good, we fall into a nice range. Suitability for health professions. So this is that overall gestalt of, do I feel like this person was a good candidate overall? And so that's where it comes to looking at the whole thing overall. So for this candidate, fail, inadequate, good, strong, okay, very strong, okay, and excellent, and outstanding. Okay, so again, I think we fall into a nice range. Yes?
In this last one, I wonder, I sometimes see, is it like an average sometimes, or would it be funny to see this one say just good, when the rest have said,
was so great.
I'm wondering in my mind.
I don't know, do you want to?
Sorry, what's the question?
Well, it's just whether the fifth one, which is kind of the same across all stations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Which is kind of the summary one.
Correct.
Should it be, I'm trying to always think, should it be the average of what your other answers are, or could it be different because you're looking at it more broadly away from that thing we've just seen in front of it? That's what. I was kind of,
So I have a perspective, and I'm happy to have everybody else chime in on this conversation. And I think it's a conversation that the MMI committee should have when we look every year at the criteria and how the questions are framed. I don't think it should be an average. It is a kind of global perspective of the performance. I think what this particular question also affords you as a rater is a bit more marge de manoeuvre to recognize other things that are not in the other questions. So a person might distinguish themselves for something that's not actually in the other criteria, but that you think, well, that was remarkable that they did that. I didn't see anybody else do this one thing, draw from their own personal experience or relate some kind of story in a very skillful way, or on the other end of the spectrum, do something that wasn't part of the criteria but that you didn't like. That's also a space to kind of recognize some things that need to be part of the score, but that don't necessarily have a specific criterion. It does something to the standardization, obviously, and I could be psychometrically way off on this. I'm not a psychometrician, but this is how I've seen raters behave with this kind of station. Does that help? Is that helpful? It is. I don't know if any of the other MMI committee members, maybe Geoffroy, do you want to stand up?
Well, I just have questions because, I mean, it sounds awesome. I mean, I was a little confused in my answer because it sounds almost like then you are rating like an X factor of some kind that you think that the student brings. But I also thought that the student can do very well but not necessarily have like an extra sort of bonus that he brings. And then if that's what the case is, then I'm not sure what more criteria to answer this question anymore. If the person doesn't have this sort of extra zest.
Then I think you can give it that whole like gestalt feeling. Greg,
so I mean maybe my point on that was, maybe you can answer your question. I look at this question more into the fact that would I want this candidate to be my physician?
Okay.
Would it be suitable to be my physician? And I thought that for a little bit.
And what I like about it is that even though he's, you know, being put in this situation not too long ago, there's those situations where you've never faced them in the past where you have to actually go and tell somebody they have bad breath or they have issues with body odors, whatever. It's not an easy situation, and you don't always have the tools or the experience of doing it, and that comes with time. If we look at, you know, either med students or residents or practicing position for a long time, there's that part of like finesse that will come with time. And in this situation, I think he has all the important aspects of, you know, where he wants to be, or, you know, I would like this guy to be my physician. He's going to improve on, you know, maybe how to react to awkwardness and things like that. But overall, I think he's doing a good job. And I like that question for that, in terms of like, would I see that person, you know, next to me? Yeah.
Any other comments?
I do have one more question, not so much about this one, but the other ones. So it did actually seem like there was a fairly decent spread amongst, let's say, strong to good to excellent, at least in my opinion. So are there any, without getting into detail, are there any subcategories that we should address? For example, he's got a score.
So on the score sheet,
yeah.
Which you have,
that's it.
There are descriptive explanations of what failed criterion means, what good means, what strong means, so that you can actually flesh up, because you might not use those words as anchor words for the kinds of things that you're seeing, but the other descriptors are there, and I can actually show you the score sheet afterwards, and you can read those through. I think maybe we'll look at them, and I think that would be an easier way of answering your question.
Do you want to pull up the score sheets?
Do you want to do that right away?
Sure. Do you have those?
Yeah, they're just, you'll see them when you scroll. No, they're in here.
Oh.
You have to scroll down in the PowerPoint to, you'll see like a white piece of paper on the, there. There are these two. So here, it's hard to see in here, but so failed criterion, candidate did not answer the question. Oh, sorry.
So do it from there.
Okay. I can't read all the way over there, though.
Yeah, I'll read it.
Okay.
Failed criterion, candidate did not answer the question or
provide a response
that can be evaluated. Inadequate, unsatisfactory, not minimally acceptable. Example, weak, inferior, not competitive, below average. Good, demonstrates a level of performance that is relatively common, acceptable, decent, average, middling. Strong demonstrates an above average level of performance, solid. Very strong demonstrates a distinguished level of performance. Excellent demonstrates a level of performance that is remarkably superior, so leading. And outstanding is demonstrates a level of performance rarely seen, which represents a gold standard. Does that help you?
Yeah.
Does that help everybody?
I think on a given day, you might see one or two sevens.
What's outstanding?
Outstanding. Sorry, I don't know why I said seven. But outstanding. You might not see it that
so
much.
So people can be fantastic, but they might not be outstanding. It's those people that you see that you're like, wow, like that blows me out of the water. That is such an unbelievable. I didn't even think that somebody could do something like that. It wasn't even in my thought process, but I'm blown out of the water. That's outstanding. So most people aren't outstanding. Most people are like every good. They're good.
They're very good. You saw the pool, like the day pool comes down to 600 people. They're all
right. They're all going to be great. Yeah.
So it's we need to spread.
I'm going to go back up, yeah.
It was addressed in the last info session, but we're not comparing one to the other. Like we're going to be affected by what we saw last, obviously, but you have to try not to be, right? You have to try to just look at it, what's your whole standard. Yeah.
On those.
Right. Because it just like it distinguishable sounds like it's comparing. You know what I mean? But it's not. It's more just to you.
It's hard not to, but you have to try to think of what your gold standard would be. Right? And so if somebody goes above what you would think your gold standard would be, to me that would be outstanding. Everyone else, if they come close to it or do what you think would be the right response, should be good, strong, like all the other ones, right? And so when I've done it in the past, I tend to look at those and say, oh, where were they? Where did they fit? Because it's a little bit more discerning in the good category than it is in the bad category. Does that help? Does that help? Yeah? Okay. So this is the same exact, we're going to do it again. This is the exact same story, okay? And the same questions. So I'm going to bring up the second clip.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've had a bit of a rough morning. I walked out of res like really fast because I was late for class, but I had time to grab coffee.
Oh, man. I'm glad you got your morning coffee. It happens, eh? Like, you have a morning where you're kind of just out of it.
Yeah, a lot of them are like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's first year.
So how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, yeah. Is there anything you texted me last night. Is there anything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, well, I figured, like, we've gotten really close over the year. Like, you know, we just started school and everything, and so we have a nice little friend group going on. And some of the teammates actually asked me on our project today. We were a little bit concerned for you, so I just wanted to talk to you about that. So what came up is it's going to be a little bit awkward, but I figured since we're such close friends, I figured we should just talk about it. But a lot of the teammates were worried for you because we noticed that your breath has been kind of strong lately.
My breath?
Yes.
I have bad breath?
It's not bad.
I know
it's awkward, but honestly, we were just really worried for you because we noticed when we first met you, you know, it's not always like that. We just noticed recently, so that's why we were really just worried for you.
Oh my god, I'm so embarrassed.
Don't worry.
Oh my god, impressive. But you said our teammates asked you to talk to me about it.
So they did.
The whole team is talking about it.
No, but it's not like we're talking about it.
Oh my god.
Remember, Beth, we're friends, right? So we were just talking about. We're not really sure what's going on with Beth. We feel so bad, like, since we're the closest in the group. We figured I should come talk to you just to see how you're doing.
But I mean, you guys are really, are you guys really my friends, or do you feel just obligated to be with me on the project?
No, definitely not.
Obviously, you guys are the only people that I've made so far. Like, it's been a bit lonely, and I was so happy when I found you guys, but now I realize that I'm, like, making you guys feel really bad by being next to me.
No, not at all. It's been hard for all of us, right?
Oh, my God, it's so awkward.
But, you know, we all have awkward times, right? And, like, I always think back. I was friends with some of these guys back when I was in, like, in grade school. And I think in grade 8, there was a day when I really had to go to the washroom. And I couldn't hold it in time. And then it just came out. So, I had wet pants for most of the day.
That's really embarrassing, too.
So, I mean, I think that was worse than this.
And honestly, it's going to be a little bit awkward. We just wanted to talk to you because we're such close friends. We thought maybe we would just check in and see if you're doing all right.
Oh, so it's really nice of you to talk to me. I mean, I'm so sorry. It's so embarrassing.
Don't worry about it at all.
I mean, I don't know what happened. I thought it was okay. I was taking care of myself.
Yeah.
I mean, first year was really hard, and
yeah.
Being in res, like I can't really cook a lot and drink a lot of coffee. But
yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, sometimes you have to do this, but have you had any habits lately that have changed or something like that?
Well, I mean, there's just a coffee. I drink it every day now, and I wake up so late every day that I don't have time to brush my teeth, and
right.
I just like run to class. And I mean, I've been stressed because like midterms are around, and I smoke a bit when I'm stressed. So.
Oh, that's new.
Do you think that's why? Do you think that's
yeah.
something I should change?
I don't know all of it, but
mm-hmm.
I think those could probably all contribute. But it sounds like overall you're just really stressed out. So if you need any help, you know, we're all in the same boat. We can maybe study together or just hang out together. Like we've got our group projects.
Yeah.
So we could go out,
but
no. Perhaps have dinner beforehand and then go.
Oh, that would
just
be
like,
nice.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys don't feel obligated to, I don't want you guys to feel bad for me.
We're
know?
Friends, right? Like,
yeah.
This was super awkward, so I wouldn't talk to you if we weren't close friends.
Yeah,
like,
it's really
it's
super
true.
Awkward.
Yeah,
yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, do you think, just like, how can I, like, make it better? Because I really didn't think it was a problem.
Yeah, for sure. So, brushing your teeth in the morning.
Oh, yeah?
It seems
oh.
like a big chore, but it's like,
okay. Yeah, you're right.
Is two
you're
minutes,
right.
So if you do a minute, you know, it's better than 0 minutes. So
yeah.
I think it's just really quickly in the morning. For me, it kind of wakes me up. So it helps you feel more together.
It's cute.
So I would do that. And have you been able to see the dentist?
No, because I'm new to the city, and before like, I didn't really have a good like follow-up with the dentist. I think it's been something like 2 years since I've been to the dentist, so that's pretty bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is something where you necessarily have to see the dentist, but it would be good to just go for a follow-up.
Okay.
There's a clinic downtown that I go sometimes, so if you want, I can help get an appointment there and kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through those questions again. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so same thing. We're just going to do them again with this candidate. So again, looking at the question, establish a friendly, non-judgmental relationship with the student receiving the news. So fail, inadequate, good, strong, very strong, okay, excellent, okay, and outstanding. So we also, again, fell into the very strong excellence. So this is the point of showing you the two videos isn't to show one awful one and one amazing one. It's really to show how it's hard to discern in these, you know, it's very easy to find you did awful, and it's a little bit easy to find, wow, you blew me out of the water. It's sort of those middle ones that become the challenge. And so he was great, right? The first one was great, this guy's great, so how do you discern? And so that's where we're at. So it seems that everyone was between very strong and excellent for this question. So for the next one, ability to respond to the student's initial awkwardness and embarrassment. So fail, inadequate, good, strong, very strong, excellent, and outstanding. So again, between very strong and excellent. I think that's pretty good. Communication skills, listening, speaking clearly, use of appropriate language, nonverbal cues, questioning, and requests for clarification. So fail, inadequate, good, strong, very strong, excellent, and outstanding. So same thing, so also between those two. And ability to be helpful in resolving this current situation. So fail, inadequate, good, strong, very strong, excellent, and outstanding. So this guy seemed to fare better than the last one in terms of overall people felt a little bit more committed to where he is. And then the last thing, which is that suitability for health professions. So fail, inadequate, good, strong,
very strong, excellent, and outstanding. So there's a couple outstandings. Okay. Does anyone have any questions about the process here? Okay, we're good. Oh, yes.
So I'm thinking of a possible scenario in which this guy nails it for like the first 3-4 questions and then doesn't keep track of his time and runs out of time and then doesn't get a chance to offer, you know, a way to help this person. So do they fail on that part? Again, you know.
It's a very good question.
If you cannot assess that, then you can't assess it. The actors are coached to make sure, their job is to make sure that you as a rater are able to assess every single one of those things, and they're much more aware of the time than the candidates will be who are highly stressed. So their job is to make sure that they hit all the marks. They have prompts that must happen at 2 minutes, at 3 minutes, at 5 minutes, and their job is to do that. So it's unlikely that they'll run out of time. Let me put a little caveat on that. We've now reduced our performance time from 8 minutes to 7 minutes. We've talked it over with the simulation center. We don't believe that that's a big risk of people running out of time because we're adapting the prompts. And in fact, the flip side of it would happen more frequently, which is that you cover all of it and then you have dead time for a minute and a half. And the actors are scrambling to try and keep the conversation going, which was part of the rationale of bringing it down to 7 minutes. That was 5 minutes. So
the act,
to give you an idea.
So just for this specific case, for example, if it hadn't come up, the actor would say, what do you think? So she actually said, what do you think I can do about it? And so she's making sure that they address the last point. Now, if the actor does that and the student doesn't respond to that question, well, they haven't responded adequately. Does that make sense? Okay, I'm passing it back to you, Charmaine.
Okay. Oh, there's another question.
I was just going to ask about whether in that scenario, usually I would ask somebody to, you know, sit down for a minute rather than standing there looking at each other face to face, because that seems more tense, more like a punishment. Not relaxing, you know, come on, relax, sit down, it's kind of a bit of a chat.
So that would have been assessed under the communication and making the rapport, but that actually was recorded at last year's training session that was happening right here. So it's not like at the simulation center where there are chairs where they could, and they needed to stay standing because we needed to be able to capture the video.
Okay.
So that was specific to the way that was recorded last year, but it's a very good question.
But at the Sim Center, so the way the Sim Center is structured is in each of those rooms, there's going to be a table and a couple chairs. So there's opportunity, if the actor's not sitting, there's certainly opportunity for the candidate to say, let's grab a seat. Why don't you take a seat? I'm going to sit and we'll sit down next to each other. And that's totally, that would, you know, to me would say, oh, wow, look, he upped the ante. That candidate did a great thing. Does that make sense?
Thanks. I just wanted to say that was Giuseppe Frenda, Nabras Borsi, and Dulia Hamad, three of our wonderful medical students who volunteered to do that last year and who were told exactly kind of how well to perform on each of the criteria, so it's not a reflection of their actual abilities on that station. They were acting too, so I just wanted to thank them again for allowing us to use the video. Okay. So is everybody comfortable? We're good? Everybody's still awake and happy? Okay, good. I think we have about 20 minutes left. Okay, so we're going to quickly go through the other five kinds of stations that you may be assigned to during your MMI days. The interaction-based stations, as I told you before, are the CV station and the probabilistic thinking, graphic interpretation, and estimation and orders of magnitude. The CVPN station is an intense one. If you are assigned to that, you will find out today. You'll get an email from Lucy Belair in our office. You will be assigned it if you said that you're willing to go in to the room with candidates. There are lots of other reasons why you might or might not be scheduled on this, but that's the main criteria is that you're willing to go in the room. You will receive the package a week in advance, or for some of you 4 or 5 days in advance
with the 25 to 30 CVs that you will be asked to rate on the day of. You'll also get in the package the guidelines that CVPN raters used at the first stage of the process. You'll remember that this is the one tool that kind of travels through the whole process. So we thought it would be interesting just for you to understand what was evaluated at the pre-screen stage to give you a perspective of what's already been covered and then to see what happens at the second stage. You'll interview the candidate for 7 minutes, and then you'll have 2 minutes in between when the next person is standing at the door to record your scores for that person. So it needs to happen in that 2 minutes. Some people use notepaper and write it down on notepaper first and then transcribe it. Some people do it right on their score sheets. It's up to you to figure out what method is going to be comfortable for you, knowing that it's rapid fire and they're one after another. Instructions are provided with standardized questions to be asked of every single candidate. And just like the actors have their prompts, these are your prompts. We need you to hit each of these questions. It's challenging because they're talking a lot about themselves. And typically every year, the feedback that we get from applicants is that they wish the CV station was a 20-minute long station because they really want to talk about themselves more. So you've got to rein that in. There is a possibility at the pre-interview stage of the CVPN raters flagging a concern. So if at the first stage somebody read a CV and thought, oh, is it really possible to work 80 hours a week and study full time if I'm reading this correctly, and they will flag that out to us, we will call the referees that are provided. You don't have the list of referees in your packages of CVPN raters or in the interview, but we collect those. And then we will follow up and do some fact-checking, verification, make sure that they're telling the truth in the documents that they have submitted to us. At the stage where you would be interacting with them for the CVPN station, when you get your package, if there are concerns that were raised at the pre-screen stage, whether they are resolved or unresolved, you'll get a memo on the front of that CVPN. It will be a piece of paper that says, somebody flagged this concern. We verified it. It was a typographical error. They meant to put 2007, and it was actually 2008 that was written down. No need to stress out about that. You can keep going with your review of the CVPN. So we wanted to make sure that you know all the information that we know, and that you don't get hung up on that and waste kind of valuable interview time on that question. If it is unresolved, and we were not able to get the information that we needed, or if it was not one of the flagged issues, but rather a result of an arbitrary call that we make, because we do go up to about 15-20% of the pool, we arbitrarily call referees. We just pick a person on the list and start calling their referees and see if they can tell us something about this person, if we can verify the information. So for those, we will flag it to you and say, this came up in one of our fact check calls. It is unresolved. We ask you to, we're going to suggest this question, this wording for a question for you to kind of drill down with this person and probe on this issue. You may find that that is satisfactory, in which case score them appropriately, and you might want to make a note that says this is fine. If it is still a concern for you, we'll talk about professionalism flags in a minute, but you would flag that as a professionalism concern, and that would go to the committee that looks at professionalism standards. And it will be reviewed by that subcommittee at the last stage of the process. Again, for students who are being interviewed for both MDCM and DMD programs, do not ask the candidates to rank or indicate a preference of programs. And that is the CV station. Okay. Probabilistic thinking. Candidates will have 2 minutes of reading time, followed by 3 minutes to answer a questionnaire. You'll have the questionnaire and an answer key in your package. They will have a blank questionnaire in a basket in the room. They'll take a sheet off, fill it out in their 3 minutes. Then you come in, you'll have a stopwatch outside. There are also helpers who work at the simulation center who will probably be telling you, okay, you need to go. They're also working their stopwatches. So there are some safety nets there for you to make sure that we don't miss timing. But it's your responsibility to watch your stopwatch. And then you'll go through their answers on their questionnaire with them, ask them to talk through their reasoning with you, and then make sure that that completed answer sheet comes out of the room with you so that the next candidate who walks in does not have a completed answer sheet in front of them. All of these instructions are in your package as well. This is a heads up of what could happen. This station is about reasoning. It's not necessarily about getting to a precise answer or a right answer. It is how they think through the problem. The graphic interpretation question, which I described before as the infographic with no legend, and then they think about it, try to interpret it, and then you tell them what the legend is, you tell them what the context is, the same format, 2 minutes, 3 minutes to review and interpret, and then 4 minutes to discuss it with you. Again, you'll have the contextual information on another PDF, basically. And you need to ensure that you bring that back out of the room when you sit down again, and so that the next candidate can't see it. Estimation and orders of magnitude. Candidates will have 2 minutes of reading time, 4 minutes to work out their reasoning. Do you want to say anything about these stations? Or, I mean, these are...
Yeah, I mean, so those one is, so the, compared to the probability station, the probability station is really, we don't look for the right answer, we look if they use evidence in the case, and if there is if there is no bias in their judgment. And this one is to look at if they can estimate and keep their calculation in check all the way through the process. In order to give them a little bit more time to do the calculation, if you look at the previous two stations, they have 3 minutes on their own and 4 minutes with us. Now they have only 3 minutes. They have 4 minutes on their own and 3 minutes with us. That allows them to do a little bit more calculation on their own time and really verify all their steps before we go in. That's the only station that you will have to be careful if you are allocated to the station. You will not follow your peer when they go on to enter their own station. You will have to give them one more minute. You will have to give the candidate another minute. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Just to be clear, for those of you who have not done this before, stations 7, 8, and 9, which are the ones... The two that I just described, probabilities, the graphic interpretation, and this estimation station, are all in one big room together, as opposed to the clinical rooms in the simulation center that are individual little rooms with doors that close. We set up room dividers, and there are six stations, so there's two station sevens, two station eights, two station nines, and the evaluators are seated at the middle. So it's quite possible for you to be kind of swayed by the other evaluators who are going in at another timing. So it's just a timing issue for you to kind of be alert to the fact that you're on a different clock than the others. But again, on the day of, you'll be briefed about it again, and we'll guide you through it.
Is that the right answer does matter more in that one? Is it when you're making that distinction between one or the other? Or?
No, so in the probability, it's really like, do they use the evidence listed in the problem, and do they abstract from any bias, which... So you will see the scenario are really into like bias, and the student might actually jump into the little scenario. But in this specific station, you will have different ways of approaching the problem. It's just they keep track of the magnitude. So we're gonna deal with like a potential. We're gonna deal with thousands and thousands of units. So they will have to keep track of these. So at the end of the day, you will have a magnitude, a number that is a magnitude, but it could be difference of like 2-fold, 3-fold, doesn't matter much of the right answer. We want to make sure that they keep track of if it's millimeter and not like meter, like, you know, they keep track of this big magnitude. That make sense?
Yeah.
And just, so these are also these are also stations where you will be scheduled on it if you have agreed to go in. And also where we have confidence that you have confidence to go in and do this, because I wouldn't be very comfortable doing this kind of station, but I know that many of you are, and those are the folks who we schedule on these stations. Typically, we'll go back to people who have done them before, who have experience doing them. We'll put backups in so that they can get a sense of how to do it and what the parameters are, and then we kind of have a continuity of evaluation in that way. The last kind of station that is remaining is the written response. So candidates read a passage for 2 minutes. They then have the passage still beside them, and they sit down, and they can either use the computer that is provided for them or write a response by hand. And they have 7 minutes to respond to the passage. There are questions that they're asked about the passage, and they have to write about it. The evaluator for this station is actually parked behind the glass, very closely, kind of nestled in between people who are doing the actor-based stations. So it's actually it's a very relaxed station. There's no time pressure on this station. We might, because there's no time pressure on the station and we're low on backups, we might actually ask you to also be a backup on the stations that are close to you. It's an opportunity for you to also kind of see what's going on in the other stations. But it's an important station. It allows us to understand the candidate's ability to express themselves and to interpret, find meaning in somebody's narrative. They're reading a passage that is a person's answer to a question. I won't give you more than that. You'll see it on the day of. But that's that station. And the Simulation Center staff member will bring you the document. So you don't even have to move. You sit there and somebody brings you a piece of paper and you score it. And then somebody, 8 minutes later, somebody brings you another piece of paper and maybe I'll bring you a coffee. I won't bring you a coffee. professionalism flags. I'll be doing some other things. So on your score sheet, which we looked at briefly a minute ago with Dr. Bank, on the front side of it, I'll show it to you in a minute. There's a place for you to indicate flags as well. There are two kinds of flags that you might have to indicate for us. A technical flag might be something like, I missed my timing on my stopwatch. The student had 25 seconds less or more than they were supposed to. If that is an issue, it's important for you when you're describing that flag to tell us if you feel that had an impact on your ability to rate the candidate on any of the criteria or all of the criteria, if it has any impact on their scoring. So that's that. If fire alarms have gone off in the past, standardization issues with acting, the actor all of a sudden said something they'd never said in the first 15 times that I saw it, what was going on there, that's something that we would be alert to, and if ever it's necessary, we can remove a score from a candidate if it's a valid and justified reason. It doesn't happen very often. Professionalism flags. You'll get a very clear briefing on this on the day of as well. We have a code of conduct. We expect all of the members of the community, of the Faculty of Medicine, to behave according to the code of conduct, and we also expect applicants to behave that way in their interview setting. In the code of conduct, it actually says that compliance with the code of conduct is a requirement for membership in the community. So that's how we've linked it to the admissions process. There is a rubric on the back of your score sheet, and you're asked and told very specifically how to present a professionalism flag. There is a committee on professionalism standards, which is a subcommittee of the admissions committee. It's chaired by Dr. Peter Steinmetz. It was previously chaired by Dr. Namta Gupta, who is the Assistant Dean of Student Affairs, and who is the keeper of the code of conduct. The subcommittee will review professionalism flags for candidates who, after we've ranked them, show up in the range of being potentially made an offer of admission or on the waiting list. So anybody who might ever have a shot at stepping into the MD program who has a professionalism flag will come to the professionalism committee. In a given year, we might have in the order of 15 to 20 flags. However, maybe 3 of those people are in the order, in the rank order list range of offer or waiting list. So there's a lot of correlation between poor scores and professionalism concerns. So that's a relief to us to know that. But this is how it works. So we don't do the full review of those candidates unless they are potentially going to get an offer. The subcommittee will make its recommendations by reading the flag that you have described with the code of conduct and the evaluation criteria and the instructions to the candidate. They have the full picture of on paper of what happened. And they will make recommendations to the admissions committee, who has final authority over decisions about who gets offers and who doesn't get offers. The subcommittee will meet on March 11th. The admissions committee will meet three days later, and we will aim to have offers out for this pool within about a week after that. Don't tell anybody these dates because we're quite confident we'll get to the offers on March 21st, but people are very rapidly checking their statuses, and we like to kind of control their stress on our end of things. The code of conduct, the link is here. On the day of the MMIs, we will have resource copies of the entire code of conduct. We don't want to print copies of the code of conduct for every single rater. It's a lot of paper, and there's already a lot of paper in your packages and floating around the simulation center. But we will have resource copies that will be around where the stations are happening, as well as in the meeting room where all evaluators are. You already have the rubric of the key components that you might actually see in one of these interactions on the back of your score sheet. But if you actually need the full text of the document, we have it on hand. We want you to report facts, observed behaviors, provide direct quotes from what was said by the candidate, try to distinguish the observed behavior and language from just badly doing the station. A person can do badly and not be breaching the code of conduct. We want you to link it to the code of conduct, clearly indicating the kind of inappropriate behavior that you see using the rubric. There are checkboxes that are there for you. So this was the front. You'll see at the bottom here, this is where you'll bubble in if you have a professionalism flag or a technical flag. And the optical scanner will then let us run a report that tells us that there's flags on these people. And the whole back of the sheet is about flags. So step one, describe what you saw. Facts, direct quotes, as little interpretation as possible. And then use the rubric underneath to indicate what exactly you're linking this to in the code of conduct. Were they throwing things? Are they violent? Are they inappropriately touching people? Are they using profanity inappropriately? Or I don't know if you could use it appropriately. Are they using belittling or berating statements? These are the kinds of things that you might see in situations that we put them in. We put them in sometimes stressful situations. And how do they cope with that? Well, we'll see. And then the technical flags are underneath. And that is it. Does anybody have, we have parking passes. This is the business of parking passes. If people need parking passes, you can come and see me in a second. Do we have questions or? Yes, Dr. Dalton.
Does it usually end on time?
Does it usually end on time? It usually ends on time. And if, for whatever reason, something looks like it's not going to end on time, it's perfectly okay for you to tell me, I need to leave this place at 5:50 or 4:50 or whatever it is, and we'll just work it out with your backup. We will make sure.
That's why they're called patients.
We usually, it is. If all the evaluators show up on time, we finish on time. We finish on time all the time. It will be very clearly spelled out to you if you're called. I think you're supposed to come at 7:30, so be there at 7:30. Some people roll in at 7:15 and wait for the coffee guy comes at 7:30. So if you come before then, there's no coffee. But 7:30, be there on time. There'll be a brief briefing, and then we'll place you. And then then you hit the ground running.
And it's a good lunch.
There's a new caterer this year, so we'll see about that. But We do survey you afterwards, and we do ask you if you're satisfied with the food and the parking and all the other accoutrements that we try to offer. But we try to make you happy. We are incredibly grateful for the time that you are putting into this. We can only offer you lunch and parking. So we do try to give you the good food. And the kind of deep and most sincere thanks that we can offer you on behalf of the faculty and the admissions office and our committees. Thank you very much. And enjoy. Oh, yes.
Should we give you the signed confidentiality
statements? You can. I should have indicated to you before that this was really for you to know what the deal is. You're going to be asked to sign these again on the day of. If you want to give it to me now, I can take it, but I may very well ask you to do it again because it's paper that I need to keep tracking. But I wanted you're welcome to walk out of the room with these. We want you to know what the confidentiality standards are. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Parking.